Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you're with us today. Moments away, author Loriana Raymond Divinell will be with us. But first, Japanese beetles attacking your plants? Rescue has a trap that will work for you, which we have installed in our garden and is doing quite well.
Japanese beetle traps, which you, when used properly, draw beetles away from your plants and trees. The trick is to hang them 30 feet from the plants you want to protect. That way you lure beetles away from areas where they can cause damage and trap them. Rescue Japanese beetle traps are the only trap with a controlled release lure that lasts the entire beetle season. Their extra large bag is welded directly to the trap and stays put even when it's full of beetles. And Rescue Japanese beetle trap is the only trap with a reusable bag that opens and closes at the bottom in case beetle season is a bad one. Just open, empty, and keep trapping the beetles with the same trap. You can find all this information at rescue.com. It's made in the USA. Again, that's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Loriana Raymond Divinell is an environmental educator, teacher, mom, community volunteer, writer, and children's book author. Her website is LorianaWrites.com. Welcome to the program, Loriana.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day. So let's get into it. What is an environmental educator? I'm assuming this is more than just telling people don't throw trash in the ditch or in the lake. I'm going to say there's more details than that.
Sure, sure. And I think that's what a lot of people think as well. And I know oftentimes when I explain it, I know people think, oh, maybe you just work at a nature center. But environmental education has a really broad scope. We teach about the outdoors. We teach about ecology. But we also teach about water resources and waste and energy and just looking at the natural resources that are available in the world and how the use of them affects people and how people affect their usage.
Well, yeah, and talking about the being cautious of the amount of water, where we're located, Lake Michigan, it's very plentiful, but there's many portions of the country that's listening to the show right now where water is almost non-existent, and we need to be cautious of how we use any drop of water, no matter where we're at.
Right, right. And I think we take it for granted here in Wisconsin because we are a water-rich area, but around the world, that's definitely not true. And so we have to think of ourselves as global citizens in that regard.
Most definitely. So why is environmental education vital, especially with younger kids? Do they seem interested? And how do you keep them engaged?
So we like to say with the kids that we teach, environmental education is really kind of just life education or world education. And if we think about the things that we need to survive, we need air, we need water, we need food, we need shelter, and all of those things have some kind of energy cost. Environmental education looks at the cost of acquiring, using, and disposing of those resources and how it affects people. And for kids, you know, those are really big concepts that, you know, we don't want to weigh them down with, but we try to engage them by drawing on their curiosity of the natural world. It's a Wisconsin state standard that kids are exposed to the outdoors, to be able to explore outdoors and to just wonder about how our world functions. And it's this connectedness to the land that we have and the water and the air. And by building that at a young age, we hope to develop citizens who are concerned about the earth and want to make sure that they give back to it.
Now, I'm going to take the guess that it's kind of one of those you teach the kids and the kids will teach the parents and the grandparents.
In theory, that would be wonderful, and we always definitely hope that they bring lessons home with them, and we want to make sure that we connect with them so that they have a positive experience and that they have that positive attitude going forward when they're thinking about all of those resources.
Awesome. So when I was a student in the early 90s, the good old Wisconsin public school system, there was there's a lot of environmental education that was focused on reduce, reuse, recycle. That was huge then. I just remember that being like a big point. What is the focus now?
So I think that focus hasn't gone away. I think if you ask anybody, I assume I'm kind of around your age as well, because I remember those things too. Those are definitely things that we want to keep in mind, but I think environmental education has expanded that. And a lot of people say there are really five R's, and the first one is refuse. So before you take anything and have to, you know, reduce your usage of it, just don't even take it. And so I think of, like, when I go to the grocery store, I refuse to use plastic bags that are there because I know that I can use something that I already have in that place. So there's refuse, there's reduce, which is use less of the things that you do use. Reuse things once you're done with them. How can you give them a second life? Recycle is actually the trickiest one. And I know that's the thing that people often think of first, but it's actually the thing you want to do after you've done all of the other things, because there isn't always a use for or an end use for recycled materials. And then the fifth R that we often don't think of is rot. And I know you guys are a gardening show, so maybe that's on more people's minds with your listeners. But composting is really a great way to renew some of those resources that we have. So definitely those five R's are still used today. But I would say the thing that has maybe changed the most in the last, 20 or 30 years since I was in school, was we're looking towards how can environmental green economy be used to drive our world forward. So rather than just thinking of things that, the way that we've always done them, how can we do things differently but still in an economical way and still make money, but do it, in a way that's better for the planet.
And the recycling thing, we can get in as deep as you want to go here, but we are now learning to some degree, if it goes in the recycling bin, that doesn't mean it gets recycled based on
exactly
where it goes and what it is and what country it used to get shipped to, and now it doesn't. So we're getting some more eye-opening information on that pretty frequently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a long time it was billed as, the answer to our waste problem. And what we've come to find is a lot of people just, sent it away, and, away isn't away for everybody. There's definitely places where that has built up because there's just no other use for it.
Right. If I see it go away, it means I did a good thing, but that you got to figure out if you're really doing a good thing by putting in the recycling
right
bin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's definitely important for people to, I think, realize is that a lot of times people call it like downcycling or faux cycling because of, it's not always being recycled. And when people are educated on that, I know that they might become more conscious of what they're purchasing, that it's not just going to go, hopefully, to get recycled.
Right. So, yeah. That front end, if we can, have people refuse to, don't get things that you don't need, but then also reduce the things that you buy and reduce the things that you use, that really, makes a difference when you're looking for what you do with it when you're done with it.
And, growing up on the farm, farm life, much different than city life, many things could disappear very quickly with a strike of a match. We, recycle. I mean, really, we recycled aluminum cans because it was value to it, but everything else was 60 or 80 miles away, so it went in a burn pile and it disappeared. That's just how it worked for farm life.
Yeah, I grew up on a farm as well, and we had our, town dumps that opened up every Saturday. And so, we recycled cans and glass and everything else went. So things have changed a lot, which, hopefully is for the better. But there's just so many different ways that we can, even go a step beyond.
Definitely, I agree. So we are talking with Loriana Raymond Duvernell. She's an environmental educator, writer, and full of great information. So your book is Under in the Mud. It's for all ages and beautifully illustrated. What is this book about, and why should our listeners look into it?
Sure. So book is kind of a combination of me being an elementary educator, actually, and an environmental educator, and wanting to teach people some of the things that I'm passionate about in the environmental world. The book is a picture book about how animals survive in winter. Originally, the idea came from a question my daughter asked me when she was in kindergarten, and she was looking for frogs, and it was the middle of January. And I was like, Marina, there are no frogs out in January. And she asked where they went. And when she asked me how they went, and, I'm an environmental educator. And I was like, I don't know where they go. And so it kind of sent me on a learning path just to figure out where they went. And what I said, I didn't know it. I said, maybe under something somewhere. And she said, under in the mud. And that phrase kind of reminded me of a book that I had as a child called Over in the Meadow, which a lot of people might be familiar with. And so the book is based off of that rhyme, and it looks at ways that animals that are common in the Wisconsin area, especially, ways that they survive the winter. And some of them are pretty unique. I learned a lot about different adaptations that animals have. And I'm thrilled that I'm able to share that and teach others kind of on a wider scale.
Very interesting. And not maybe not just for kids, but there's some people of adult age that are not familiar with how some animals migrate or live through cold winters in the northern portion of the United States either.
Yeah, absolutely. I know my dad always says, you know, who knew that, you know, frogs can freeze like popsicles, or that garter snakes can gather in big snake balls. And these aren't things that, you know, we learn in our typical K-12 education. And so it's kind of fun to find that out when you're older as well.
Well, what are some things we can do in our everyday lives that people can change to help the environment that maybe we are just overlooking that would be common sense once you say it?
Sure. So I think what I always say is the world is not looking for you to be perfect. It's just looking for you to try. And so if there are ways that you can be mindful of your consumption, every little bit helps. You know, how much electricity you use, how much gas you consume, where your groceries are coming from, you know, where your, you know, food is grown, the clothing that you choose to buy or reuse. Is there a better alternative when you are looking at purchasing something? And it's okay to, you know, not be the, you know, greenest of the green when you think about these things, but just to put that extra thought in and try to, you know, do a little bit better by the earth. One of my favorite authors is Robin Wall Kimmerer, and her main teaching is, how can you give back to the earth in gratitude for everything that the earth gives to us? I mean, we think about, you know, our water and our soil and our air resources, and just, can we be thankful that the earth can sustain us, and how can we do better by it?
That's definitely very helpful. We've really enjoyed our time with you today. How do people find out more about you and your great information?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. My website is laurianawrites.com. My name is goofy spelling. It's LAURIANNA, and then writes like you write a book. If you want to find me through Amazon, that works just as well. And if you Google my name, I'm pretty much the only Laurianna Raymond Duvernell out there. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Well, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered to Holly and myself and educating not only us, but all of our listeners across the country.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks again.
Absolutely.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.